What is your feeling toward the Democrats, particularly those from your own state of Texas, who say they plan to support the Graham-Latta bill?
Sorrow.
What was your reaction to Speaker O'Neill's remark, practically conceding Democratic defeat in the battle of the budget?
That he didn't.
We've been hearing about White House attempts to woo Democrats and a few Republicans for their votes on the budget. What are the Democrats doing to appeal to wavering GOP members of the House?
Well, look, about as much as we can, but not as effectively, I think, if I must be frank. It's an unequal contest. It's a little bit like going into the ring, the other guy's got brass knuckles and you've got 16-ounce gloves. We're doing what we can. We don't have any rewards to bestow or favors to withhold or punishment to mete out. All we got's an attempt at logic, unlike some misconceptions. Speaker and the majority leader don't have anything really except a hunting license to persuade if we can. And we've been trying with varying degrees of success. And I have to say to you, in all candor, that we're going into the seventh inning about 3 runs behind.
On the same subject, Ronald Reagan has been phenomenally successful in persuading citizens and their congressmen that his program should be passed intact, without changes. Why is he so successful in doing this, something which none of his predecessors has been able to do in the last 20 years?
Well, he's a charismatic person. He's great on that tube. He's beautiful with a script. He can say it so marvelously and so believably, even when oversimplifying, and I don't think he consciously oversimplifies. Mr. Reagan reads a script with such sincerity, even when his scriptwriters have done him a grave disservice. And I'm serious about that. I don't mean in the rhetorical quality of the script. I mean the factual inaccuracies that were contained in the script, surely not to his knowledge, last Tuesday night, in which it was erroneously suggested that the Democratic alternative budget, the House committee budget, so carefully and painstakingly worked out, would cost $141 billion more or something like that over 3 years. That's not true. Just flat not true. And somebody did the president a great disservice by writing that into his speech. It was a great disservice to write into the president's speech the allegation that the House committee budget would increase taxes. That isn't true. It proposes a decrease in taxes, not as big a one as Kemp Roth, no, but about a $38 to $40 billion annual increase, and that's a permanent increase. Those are permanent increases. It's not just for 1 year and then to terminate. They are permanent increases. I think in the understandable oversimplification which sometimes creeps into news stories, people get the erroneous impression that Democratic tax cuts are only for 1 year and that they'll expire at the end of 1 year. That's not so. The idea is instead that we're going to have tax cuts. It'll be permanent tax cuts, and they'll be encouraging people to build and people to invest and people to do those things in the private sector that create jobs for Americans. Now, there'll be faster write-offs, faster depreciation. There'll be some tax credits for investments of a specific type that will modernize America's industrial machinery. And there'll be other cuts for individuals. It will help them avoid bracket creep. So it wasn't true. It just wasn't true at all for his speechwriter to do him the grave disservice of writing into a presidential speech the misstatement that the Democratic program was going to increase taxes, not going to increase taxes. The only wide stretch of the imagination by which it could be concluded that things were going to increase taxes would be by the assumption that the country is going to continue to grow, which I do think it will, and that the population will continue to grow, which I do think it will, and maybe that inflation will continue, which I fear it may, at whatever pace, And those things would bring more money from the present tax rate into the coffers of government. But there is absolutely nothing in the Democratic program which would give cause for anybody to say that it's our plan to increase taxes. That's just not so. But nevertheless, people hear the president, and they tend to believe the president. People are entitled to believe that what they hear the president of the United States say is true. And so it gives us a handicap of sorts. And we're not crying about that. We're facing up to it. And I thank you for giving me this opportunity to try to set the record straight in ways that I could, and to try in my own way to provide some answers.
Why was Carter defeated so badly?
Well, he didn't get nearly enough votes.
Question on President Reagan. You referred to President Reagan as winsome. Does this mean he will win some and lose some?
I earnestly hope so, if for no other reason than to preserve his becoming humility.
Please come clean. Are you a liberal, a conservative, or something else? If so, what?
I reckon I'm a kind of a Jim Wright Democrat.
What do you think of Democratic National Chairman Chuck Manatt's idea of a party policy-setting group? Is it just a recognition that the Democratic congressional leadership has failed in providing a vision and agenda for the party?
If so, I don't share that recognition.
What message or messages is the Democratic Party giving today to the nation as far as the economy is concerned?
I think we are demonstrating that we are capable of being responsive to the public will, that we're capable of understanding when the public has told us that it wants constructive change, and that we're capable of making constructive change. I think we've demonstrated that we are able to reduce a level of expenditures by trimming waste without just totally abolishing programs. I think we are demonstrating that we're able to put patriotism above partisanship, and that we are able to work with a Republican administration and, I hope, with a Republican Senate in a cooperative way so as to produce a cooperative program. And I don't think anybody expects, when you set out to be cooperative, that you have to be submissive. And I don't believe anybody would respect us if in our efforts to be conciliatory, we were simply to be supine and spineless. I don't think anybody in the American public expects us to be mere rubber stamps. If so, you can have this job. Because I don't believe that that's what I came here to do or what my people sent me here to do. I believe the Democratic Party has demonstrated that we are free enterprisers, that we do believe in unleashing the creative genius of the American free enterprise system, but that we believe at the same time that government has a role to perform, that government is not our enemy, for heaven's sake. It's our creature, and it's our servant, and it belongs to all of us. And the government of the United States, under a system such as we, and in some respects we alone of all the earth's people enjoy, is us, for goodness sake. It isn't our enemy. I think the Democrats have demonstrated that we believe government's role is to be that of a catalyst, to create the conditions that are conducive to encouraging in the private sector those specific things that are in the public interest, such as, for example, loan guarantees to make it possible for people to go out here and make the enormous investments necessary to convert our abundant supplies of coal, of which we have 1/3 of the world's entire known reserves, into a high-grade, low-sulfur content motor oil, into natural gas. That lump of coal contains all the properties, methane, propane, butane, naphthane, everything that you find in a barrel of oil or in 1,000 cubic feet of gas. And it can be converted. We have the wisdom, if we have the will, to be once again that country that made America revive, that believed in itself, that put a man on the moon by 1970. If we give enough priority and enough determination, to making this country stand on its feet again and hold its head high, that we can do that, because we have been and are now the party of the people.
Congressman Wright, I want to thank you very much for appearing here today. Before asking the last question, I would like to present you with this National Press Club Certificate of Appreciation, National Press Club jacket to go with your National Press Club tie.
Hey, that's fine. You got no pajamas?
Next time we'll have the pajamas. That's a promise. Now, our last question is, we don't usually toss fat pitches, or at least we try not to, but I understand you are particularly adept at telling the difference between a Republican and a Democrat. How do you do it?
Well, I've heard several different definitions. William Jennings Bryan once was asked how he told the difference, and he said that if he was in doubt, he would tell the person the biblical story of Dives and Lazarus, the rich man and the beggar, and then he would watch this person's reaction. And he said if the person replied, "Oh, isn't it a shame? Isn't it a shame? Isn't it a shame? But isn't it a blessing? Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it magnificent that the table was so sufficiently endowed and so lavishly overflowing that this poor wretch could sustain himself for those various months by the crumbs which fell off its side?" And I say that man's a Republican. But he said, if he says, "Now, isn't it a damn shame he didn't have the common decency to ask a fella to sit at the table with him?" I say, that man's a Democrat.